This is Adam Shartoff, and you're listening to FilmWax Radio, presented by Rooftop Films. Welcome to episode 189 of FilmWax Radio. I'm happy to be talking into your ears. I appreciate that you're giving me a shot and this podcast a shot. It's called FilmWax Radio. It's all about independent films in New York. It started a few years ago as an internet radio show, which focused mostly on Brooklyn and the Brooklyn scene, if you want to call it that, and then expanded beyond that, just kind of organically over time. I'm like, why am I limiting myself? Independent film is exciting. Independent film is going on everywhere. This past week, Sundance was going on, and I think we just reading about all the different films that were taking place, it definitely was strong evidence of that. And there were so many interesting looking films. I'm going to try to get as many of you guys who participated there in on the podcast over the next year. And speaking of festivals, I've been going to South by Southwest for a few years now, and I got to meet somebody who I was originally introduced to through films that he did. And then met him, you know, and it's like, how do I know this guy? Of course, this is Chris Dubeck. I was first introduced to Chris in a film he made with Alex Karpovsky, directed by Brian Poyser, called Lovers of Hate. It's a very unusual film, but you can see it. I know you can see it like on Amazon, probably on iTunes, and I really, really urge you to see it. It's a great performance by Chris, by Alex, too. They play brothers. And it was the first time I saw him. And Chris has got a really long a list of credits to his name. And it goes back to the early part of the decade called the aughts, where he really started working in independent film. But he kind of hit his stride in the last, I'd say, six or seven years. If for those who are big fans of Chris is not from Austin, but he's based in Austin, so he's in a lot of the films that come out of Austin. He was originally, I guess, in Bob Byington's Harmony and Me, then came Poyser's Lover of Hate, followed by an seemingly endless string of films here. Things really picked up in 2012. Just in 2013, Chris was in Hannah Fadel's A Teacher, Andrew Bajalski's Computer Chess, Sean Gallagher's Good Night, Zach Clark's White Reindeer. And for those of you who just listened into our show with Jeff Marslett and Trieste Dunn, you'll know that Chris was also in Loves Her Gun. And I think this podcast has covered all of those films. And it wasn't like I was intentionally doing that. Just happens that Chris is in all these films. He's got a similar taste that I do. Anyway, so last year when I was at South by Southwest, we did do a discussion, and unfortunately that interview got lost. But we sat down about a month or two ago when he was visiting New York, and we got to finally knock out another interview. And it's really a long format conversation about trying to be an actor. It's fascinating. I mean, we get into Chris's background and how you try to make a living doing films that matter to you. Films with story, with character development. And, you know, he's a guy who I'm behind. I think we're both kind of hitting our stride in midlife. And so maybe there's that. I don't know. But and he's just the sweetest guy, one of the sweetest guys I know. So this coming up right now is my conversation with actor Chris Dubeck, and we'll see you afterwards.
we going to, I mean, all of us, are we going to, together, some of us, is there anything else after this, or is this basically for all of us? I mean, the general...
You mean after we die? Are you asking me if I believe in the afterlife?
Well, no, actually, I was thinking about lunch.
You're the Rudy Lucas.
What do you mean, the Rudy Lucas?
As in the Rudy Lucas that gets dedicated to in all Paul's books, that's you?
Yeah, you read that? You read the dedication page?
Of course I read the dedication. I've read those books 5 times.
Wow. Yeah, that's me.
Wow.
Well, you know about the Nazca lines, right? These are the lines you can only see from outer space. You know about the Anunnaki that came down on their giant spaceships, and, you know, the pyramids are just markers for these, you know, giant runways.
So you think we're aliens?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we need sunglasses. I mean, why do we need sunglasses? I mean, that dog doesn't need sunglasses, but we do, you know?
I know, I agree. I was talking to the microphone.
Oh,
pretend you're on a podcast.
Pretend I'm on a podcast.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that last night. I enjoyed seeing everybody, and I thought it was funny. I asked Richard Lorber, I said, so what do you do for Kino?
Yeah. So I make the coffee.
I
make coffee.
I brush out the toilets with a foaming brush.
With a toothbrush. And, I asked him to come on the podcast, so probably in the next few weeks we'll have Richard Lorber on as a result.
You had Barry Levinson. You had, all kinds of... You had William Friedkin.
Friedkin, yeah.
I'm
impressed.
Making me nervous.
Okay, if you drink from the bottle, I encourage you to.
Yeah.
But put your mic right here at your throat. Let's see how that sounds.
How about if I...
Yeah, and then drink. Swallow. Oh. Let's see how that sounds.
Did you hear any of that?
A little bit, yeah. Probably more in playback.
Okay.
You'll
get that burp, I think.
The singular Chris Dubeck finally makes it on the Film Wax Radio. Although, again, I had this conversation recently with... I had a conversation recently with Jeff Marslet and Trieste, Kelly Dunn. And that was the same episode. So it's kind of funny how life has brought all four of us, I guess, together kind of in the very fairly short amount of time where I'm able to do a whole new show, albeit individually, with three people that are in this one film.
Oh, that's right. We kind of had that episode at South By where we almost all...
Yeah. Well, you didn't talk anything. I don't think you ever spoke.
No, I just like watching... watching Trieste, listening to Trieste. I see Trieste, I think, in that movie, Loves Her Gone, I feel like she is a Shakespearean character trapped in a mumblecore.
Oh.
Is that a good line? Is that a good...
I'm trying to think of the import of the character's, you know, story that makes it almost Shakespearean, but...
Yeah, it's a tragedy.
It is a bit of... Well, it does go the dark as hell.
It goes with the dark?
It does go dark as hell. I mean, that film. But, and even though you play a relatively small role in the film, as Shakespeare said, there are no small roles.
Only small actors.
Small actors.
And there are no small
actors. Did Shakespeare
actors.
Say that?
You're doing the De Niro face, which
I'm not sure.
Nobody gets a chance to see, which is great. No, the saying is that there are no small parts, only small actors.
Right.
And then we add on to that, there are no small actors, only midgets, and there are no midgets.
Use that term.
Well, that was the last part of it. There are no midgets. There is only little people.
Right. Thank you. Because I have a good, a lovely human being named Aaron Bielmer was on this very podcast.
A little person.
Yeah. Explain to me. Not that I ever used the term midget. I think I knew better for many years, but. He explained that the midge is a bug. It's an insect. So when you refer to somebody as a midget, you're calling them basically a bug. So do it if you wish to, but that's what you're saying.
Huh.
Anyway.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
Midge. Sounds almost British. Oi, midge.
Yes, right.
You're all right.
Simon, it's midge.
It's midge.
I just got a bit midge up me bum.
Oh, I got a smidge. I got a smidge of a midge.
Chris, you're a character actor.
Really?
Yeah,
what I aspire to be.
Well, you are. No, you're already a character. Do you ever have to? Have you ever had to do an accent?
Oh gosh, I try and
even regional.
I try and stay away from them. Mm-hmm. You know, I just I might, you know, I might be inspired to do my uncle, you know. Now, Chris, now you're doing this acting thing, and like, what's your deal? You know, what, how do you make money? It's independent.
Like, yeah, independent. It sounds almost Texan, or rather Tennessee.
Really?
Not Texan. But
are we recording all this?
Why not? What do you mean? Okay. The fuck does that mean? Are you suggesting it's not podcast worthy?
No, it's all podcast
worthy. This is high quality content.
High quality content. All right.
I'll get serious. I mean, I'm just curious because
I try and shy away from accents just because
yeah,
I'm not good at them. But if somebody wants to pay me, I will definitely learn it. I think Bill Wise, my roomie and awesome actor, he's got some great accents. But you know, I spent some time in New England, so it's like every time I hear a Boston accent, it's like, oh, please, you know. Ben Affleck can barely do.
It's true. It's exactly what I was going to say. I hate those, like, the crop of who's the writer?
Them apples. Yeah.
Who's right. The author of all? Nick Pileggi? Is that who it is?
I think so. Of which? What are we talking
about?
He
does all those Boston-based crime.
Oh, okay.
Stories that have been made into films by Ben Affleck and Martin Scorsese. I think he wrote the book of The Departed, you know, was based on.
Oh, yes, okay.
Is that Nick Pileggi? I think it is. Anyway, so all these guys like Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, in different movies, but they were all put on this Boston accent. Mark Wahlberg, they're all from Boston.
Yes. Yeah.
But just bothers me because it feels fake. And by the way, I want all three of those guys on my podcast. Just for a moment. And you can do whatever fucking accent you want.
Yes.
When you come on. I was just curious.
Well, I started in mime, so I didn't come from the school of, you know, theater of funny voices.
Did you really?
Yeah. I'm not a, you know, I just want to be a clown and, you know.
Oh, you start, really?
There's many, many different origin stories. You know, there's the preschool story, there's the elementary school story, there's the junior high story. Most of them involved doing theater to get girls' attention, you know, like the fifth grade girls who are much taller and very pretty, and I noticed them very early on as a fifth grader, you know. And
but you were interested in the tall ones that were less attainable.
Well, I think when you're in fifth grade, all the girls are taller than you. I think that's the
still.
In preschool, I just remember coming to preschool and my mother coming to pick me up and just saying, you know, I'm not done playing. I want to play some more. I'm not done playing. So I still feel that way.
I see. So there's an element of the not wanting to, not growing up and to playing fantasy, staying an eternal person in that way, eternal.
Child.
Right. And also internal because, there's a lot of internal work to do as an actor. And it keeps you in this, and it's like kind of a fantasy. It's, you know, it supports the working with fantasy in that world. So it does kind of keep you childlike.
Well, you touch on a big thing, which is the character's fantasy world. Like, what a great source of inspiration to be able to tap the fantasy world of a character that, you know, is written or, you know, one you create or, you know, I think some of the things I work with, I've read a lot of books on acting, and probably because I couldn't always afford to take classes, but one of the things I like to use is something from Robert Cohen, Acting Power, is ideal future. You know, the idea of the ideal future, which is, you know, we all have this thing that we're moving towards, you know, and we can never quite, we know kind of how close we are to it, but it's true. I mean, for every character has an ideal future. And if it's a tragedy, they don't get it, do they? I mean, if it's a comedy, they get it, but it's not quite what they're expecting. It's something totally different. Interior life. I think it's obviously you see it more on screen, right? After Brando, we just sort of opened up the whole feeling and notion of being let into the screen, into the world of this person, and instead of being talked at or, you know.
Or without the
theatricality. Right. Oh, the theater.
This exaggerated version of how we behave. Like Brando, the reason why he's Brando, why Brando is Brando, you know, capital B-R-A-N-D-O. You know, how does somebody decide, you know?
Yeah.
And like, and think that he could get away with that and get paid to do that on a screen, that people would pay tickets to go see that. Mm-hmm. So that's what separates him. It's not only the ability to be so brilliant to do something that would connect with everybody without knowing that it would, but to just assume, I know this is like nobody's done it, and there's no track record for this, or very, I don't know, maybe there was there's a couple of people, maybe there were some indications, but Brando was a huge star, and he, you know.
Oh, well, I mean, he's definitely connected to the, he's definitely a child of the group theater, and the group theater,
yes.
You know, Stella Adler and Strasberg theater. And Klerman, and yeah, oh yeah,
theater,
definitely.
Not,
yeah, definitely. Right. And of course, all these people were interested in the workings of human being, like a Swiss watch, you know. Like,
well, stripping away the pretenses also.
Right.
Getting to the core. Mm. Getting to, yeah, getting like peeling the layers.
Peeling the layers of the
getting
onion.
To the, right, and getting to the most honest place possible. And that was what he did,
yeah.
You know.
And even at that point, we're projecting as audience, right? Because we are, he's allowing us that room to jump into that. You know,
yeah.
You know, in direct contrast to that would be an interesting example from Laurence Olivier in The Entertainer.
That's so funny you mentioned that, because, really? Yeah, we're so connected right now, Chris Dubeck, because literally I was thinking the other enormous influential actor, and there was a big gap, or not a gap, rather, the opposite. There was a big period where the two were like the biggest things on the marquee.
Right.
Laurence Olivier, I was just thinking as you literally said that.
Right. And
as Harvey,
I don't know, I don't remember the guy's
famous
name.
Famous character in the Entertainer.
Yeah, and oh God, how poignant, oh, how sad, yeah, how, oh,
what a
how
great,
tragic, and
yeah,
and,
but
oh, that one monologue when he's on the stuff.
Oh. I don't remember the monologue, but I just remember this character. Oh, he had well, those that period of time, you know, and I was just today as we redo this interview, and I'm going to take a sidebar and apologize to listeners if we're just like going way day. Peter O'Toole died.
Oh,
and I think about, so you bring up Laurence Olivier and The Entertainer, right. And I immediately think of this period of time where these kitchen sink British dramas, yeah, which were also huge in their day. That,
right.
They were also, it was like a wave even before. Right around the time of Brando, I think, in the UK,
sure,
where that was happening.
Right, the Look Back in Anger, the Billy Liars.
Saturday Night, Sunday Morning.
The Loneliness, Long Distance Runner.
The Sporting Life. All these films were coming out.
Hmm.
Yeah, those are some of my favorite films, that whole period of time. All those actors and Peter O'Toole, not quite in that group, but definitely ran around with them, you know, and came out of that period of time. So, you know, thank you, Peter O'Toole.
Interesting, you mentioned England. I mean, as a kid, I grew up there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, I was.
Well, let's go back a little then.
Oh,
and let's talk about it. Where did you grow up?
Well, my folks, both my parents were in the Air Force, so we moved around a lot. I was actually born in Puerto Rico. Yeah,
Puerto Rico, England.
It's a little island outside of Torquay. It's outside of Torquay, Puerto Rico.
Right. It's right near, I think, Brighton.
Brighton. Yeah.
It's on the south side of the...
Aguadilla. It means dirty water.
So you do accents.
No, I don't.
That was your Canadian? So anyway, you were saying you were born in Puerto Rico.
There's so many people who are Canadian
base.
And you don't know it.
It's disturbing.
It unsettles me. Yeah.
Christopher Plummer.
Oof.
How long did he keep that secret where we didn't know that?
And he was... Oh, no, that was a movie where he played the homosexual. Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
So you were born on a base? Or lived at the very beginning on a base.
Right, right. For many of the places, except in England, Dad decided that he didn't want us to go to school on the base, and so we went to British school. And it's an hour north of London, but it's kind of funny to me, because one of the motivations for going to British school is to be far away from the drugs and that were happening on the base. And so the night before we went, our first day of British school, we saw a documentary about glue sniffers. Glue sniffers in schools. And so anyhow, it's funny to me. But we didn't do any glue sniffing. I got into theater, mm-hmm. Got into theater then, and I fell asleep once during Shakespeare class, and this is how the British are. They're very clever, and they're very, I don't know. Anyhow, this Shakespeare teacher cleared out the entire class and let me, fall asleep in the class, and then everybody banged on the... So I think that has to do with my, shame about doing Shakespeare. I just don't have any... I don't have any real love for Shakespeare, but... how are we doing? Should I stop talking about random stuff, or...
I will do the job of... okay. And I have not done a great job of it, but I will do the job of keeping you on track.
In the flow.
A little bit. So what age are we talking about? You went through high school there?
Yeah, I went through high school there.
And then
I ended up back in the States and thinking, I don't really need to go to American high school because I finished British school. And then I realized, everybody wants a college, high school diploma. And so I was like, right. Well, I just want to do things like learn some trades. I wanted to learn a trade because I had this image of me just being this penniless actor in the future. It's like, talk about ideal future, right? Just... and I wanted a trade that would carry me through all that. And so I remember my day spent with the guidance counselor, and I was like, I was like trying to explain to him, no, what I really want to do is I want to go to the tech school, the VocTech. And he was like, well, do you consider yourself among the 50% to go on to college? I'm like, you ask me, am I stupid? I just asked you. I just told you, I want to learn how to type and weld and do it. Because I just, I was at a restaurant watching this waiter, pick up the crumbs. And I just saw, 15 years just, elapse in front of my eyes. And I just said, geez, I don't want to be, doing that. I had a vision, It's like, I want to. He's like, no, go to college, It's like, oh, God, what? So doing all these, college prep classes in high school, and I finally got out and took a few shop classes, but it's kind of a sore spot, because I went on to college, and it's like, I had a great 6 years, but broken up with. I came to New York. I managed to get to New York, and that was always a dream.
Was this where you went to college, or are you saying that college?
No, I went to Hunter College for a year.
Oh, you did? Okay, yeah. For a year. What year was that, roughly?
Just 1980.
Okay, well.
Was that? That wasn't even.
This we can keep it out even, because okay. I was there.
Were you at Hunter, really?
Yeah.
What year were you at Hunter?
Yeah. 80.
I was there in 87,
88. Yeah. Yeah,
we could have bumped into each other, and everybody dressed so well. Do you remember that?
No
they didn't.
Oh. I don't remember that.
Well, I was coming from the University of New Hampshire too, so it's
Okay, so wait, just so we know the timeline, what year did you leave the UK, and your parents were at that point stationed back at Fort?
No, Dad retired.
To New Hampshire.
Yeah, he retired in England, and then we came back
then to New England.
Yeah,
then
right.
It was going to be new and improved. I had that wrong.
From Dover to Dover.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what we did.
So you were in the south part of New Hampshire, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Just pretty close to Boston?
Yep, an hour north of Boston.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
And then you came down to New York.
Yeah, I was very right around the time you were there, I guess.
Definitely there.
In the 80s, and just had some great experiences.
Yeah.
I these actors that I looked up to, William Hurt, Jeff yes. Daniels, you know, yeah. Raul Julia, Christopher Reeve, like they all went to Circle Rep. I was like, wow, yeah. Can I work there? Can I intern there? And I sure enough, I got a chance to intern. So it was like, whoa, you know?
I went to shows there. I went to see Riff Raff there.
Wow.
With Lawrence Fishburne. This was probably after that, though.
Yeah, well, it's a restaurant yeah. now, I guess.
Oh. But anyway, so and then you went to, when did you move to Austin?
Oh, right. Austin was, moved to Austin in 2000.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I lived in Austin for longer than
anywhere
else.
So where were you in between?
L.A., Boston.
Okay. You moved around a bit.
Yeah, Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Lived in a van for a year, did kids theater and had some interesting jobs, worked for the census. Actually, I didn't work for the census till Austin, but I know I had some weird jobs in there somewhere.
Well, yeah. That makes sense for the actor.
Oh, yeah, birthday parties. Yeah.
Right, sure. You
mascots.
That. That's how we
yeah.
started with the clowning and the mime. And
right.
brings us full circle, see?
Okay.
Because that's how we started with you're talking about you got into mime. And I'm like, who?
I feel like I want to. Should I talk more about the movies, or I mean, I can.
We're going to go there now.
I can get really next. Sentimental about New York. I can do the whole sentimental spiel about, you know.
Well, you sort of began to touch on it, and then I interrupted you, and I apologize because you were talking about this incredible crop of actors, and it's true, and there have been waves of that all through the years. If you know, having grown up in New York myself, you saw. And I'm not going to talk about it at length. I just watched this documentary about Joe Papp, though, called Joseph Papp in Five Acts.
Oh, wow.
And the reason I bring it up is because my parents were members of the public theater in the 70s. And then I joined in the 80s, around the time we were talking about when you were here.
Oh, wow.
I joined the Papp Theater as an adult because it was so cheap to do
right.
so. I became a member of the public theater as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
But as a kid, I was taking all the David's plays. So we had he had these relationships with David Mamet, David Rabe, and David Hare. And all three were, you know, basically creating off-Broadway in New York.
Yeah.
With Papp as, like, you know, as their sort of guiding, you know, force. Their life. And I saw a number of these plays at the time, and they were scarring to a little kid, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
But
so
they,
somebody
but
took
I
you
had
to, like, sexual perversity in Chicago as a 10-year-old?
Kind of,
I mean,
pretty much. And Sticks and Bones. And,
wow.
And also Short Eyes, which is in a men's prison. Yeah. But at the same time, I was
Miguel
also taken
Pinheiro.
Right. I was also taken to A Chorus Line in the public theater off Broadway.
A Chorus Line
in this early 70s, where I was actually went to see this, and you know, those people don't really they kind of think about the third revival, you know, of it on Broadway. But mm-hmm. you don't if you didn't as a kid if you all you before this was Fiddler on the Roof, which is not a great show, of course, and you know, Music Man and Anything Goes and that kind of thing.
76
but there was never
trombones met yeah.
Yeah.
He's a what? He's a music man.
But there was never anything like A Chorus Line. That it was so profoundly different and powerful, and at the end, well, the whole thing was from beginning to the end, like even as a 9-year-old when I saw it, I knew I was in the presence of something that was profoundly different and powerful.
Mm.
And I just on this at the same documentary, and I'm sorry to hog the conversation, but
I saw a clip
from the original and I started to weep.
Oh,
because
my gosh.
The power of it was just nostalgia. Yeah, What I Did for Love, but just, oh God, I need this job. And you know, and
yes.
I need this and when they come out at the end and they do the kick dancing thing.
God.
And it's because they're all winners. They're all winners at the end. They all came out after years of rejection. All these, you know, actors. A Chorus Line is for me as big as maybe seminal a performance thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Because as a 9-year-old or 10-year-old when I was taken to the off Broadway theater to see it, I was so moved by it I couldn't even quite. It made me more interested in theater, and.
Well, it's so weird because you don't have those moments. I mean, you don't have that memory while you're in it. You know, like I had a small summer stock theater in my hometown, and I was very fortunate because
again Portsmouth or is this
is Hampton, the Hampton Playhouse.
Oh, where's that?
It's in Hampton, New Hampshire.
And, oh, New Hampshire.
And it was very sad. It's very, very sad now. It's called Playhouse Drive, and there's no more Playhouse. But they had it for 50 years. John and Alfred, you know, I made so many good friends, and it was my introduction to a different world. You know, here's this kid who is living in New Hampshire and just goes up to this theater thinking, you know, I'll do anything. I'll be the soda jerk, or I'll sweep floors or whatever. And there was a guy who said, well, do you want to, is this something you're really interested in? You sound like you might be interested. And he introduced me to the idea of an equity apprentice, you know, equity membership candidate and the apprentices. And I was like, wow, what a cool idea. What is that? You know, how does that work? And you get 1 point for every week of work towards your membership in the Actors Union. And like, my God, I'm like 18 years old, you know? And so I was hooked, you know, here's all these New York actors who come up to this town.
Oh, it's amazing.
And they're
this
like,
is where theater's going on.
Yeah. You know, and
it's not just, it's not a Broadway. It's,
no.
This is where theater's going on. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I guess Deborah Messing was the year before me in terms of maybe the year after me in terms of she was also an apprentice. And I just saw my boss, Connie Shulman, in Orange is the New Black. She's one of the inmates.
Which one?
She has a southern accent. Gosh, I can't.
Okay.
I can't remember exactly.
Look her up. It's a great new popular series on the Netflix.
Love,
you know.
Yeah, but it was such a great, it was such a, I mean, the smell.
By the way, Deborah Messing also was an NYU grad acting graduate.
That was another thing that I wanted to do and somehow just didn't get the courage up at 18 to, you know. But I got to New York eventually, you know, and it was a wonderful thing to learn about people like Sam Shepard and you know, as who is this guy? And then somebody said, oh, you're a Sam Shepard character. And I'm like, what does that mean? And so then immediately I read all
this. A compliment.
Wasn't that great? Like, well, it's a type, you know?
No, but it's a compliment. Just to be the Sam Shepard character type is a...
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Kinda. It's... Well, Sam Shepard and I have a lot of similarities in our background, actually. But anyhow, to be told that, then to go read all the plays, and then to study acting with a guy, Kevin O'Connor, who is in, they called him Mr. Off-Broadway, and this was, I guess, in the 70s, 60s and 70s. I went into the basement of the, actually, I think it's down the street here, the, St. Luke's? No, what's the... what's the church? There's a church over here, St. Mark's, St. Luke's. I'll think of it. But we did a show in the basement. I was an intern for a show, which was another amazing experience because, you know, I was asked, Chris, do you want to do this internship? It's this lady, she does puppets. You might like her. We think you might like puppets. Like, whatever. Okay, sure, whatever. So it was, the play was Juan Darien, and it was Julie Taymor. I had no idea who this person was. But as I walked down, St. Clement's, that's the name of the church.
Oh,
so as I walked down the steps to this church, I saw two posters of my acting teacher in the original Sam Shepard productions. I mean, what a bizarre like confluence of...
Fool for Love?
I can't, it was way before that. It was really early stuff. But anyhow, those... I'm film waxing nostalgic, I guess.
Thank
right?
you. I mean, one of the few people that have used to understand what the term refers to.
You like it?
Do I like it? That's amazing. That's fantastic. You got garlic in there. You got basil, right?
Yeah.
I'm kind of a basil guy myself. I like to make pesto. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just don't want other people to think that we... don't care about appearances. They're a little banged up.
They're fine.
Okay.
Can I tell you something? Something that was once told to me made me feel better. We're all miserable. But we're miserable together. You're not alone in your misery. I mean, look at me. I'm miserable. I mean, I'm surrounded by beautiful women. I have a ton of money, but I still want to go home and not wake up. you know? But hey, that's work. It's life. It's the way it's supposed to be. Work sucks. Okay, the way that he told me, I felt better, but...
I'm not your goddamn project, you know what I'm saying? I'm not your project.
I'm not clay, you can't just mold me.
I'm not... Yes, I'm not just some...
Putty in a box.
I'm not fucking putty. I'm not just something that you can just take, and I'm this way, and I'm just this way. I'm not going to change from this.
I'm this shape. You can't mold me into this shape.
Yeah. All right.
Should we be talking more about the movies? And
we're going to go there now. Okay, don't have to prompt me.
Sorry.
But this is what I do. Yeah. So where were you just before Austin, though? Remind me.
Just before Austin, I was in Boston.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's no... Now I understand why you would want to go to... Why you would end up in Austin, because... Boston. I love Boston, but let's face it, it's nowhere. Come on. It's nowhere. You don't want to be in Boston.
I wanted
ambitions.
I fell in love with Slacker. You know, I saw Slacker and I thought...
Really? And that was what motivated you to move to Austin?
Well, plus, and I had a girlfriend that was game because she wanted to be closer to her family in Houston and wanted to go back to school. And I just...
It's ironic that you should end up in Slacker 2011.
I know, in my favorite scene from Slacker too. Like,
was it really?
Been on Mars since the 50s. I mean, been on the moon since the 50s. Yeah. Oh gosh, that was just, and I got to meet Jerry, the original guy from Slacker. I mean, I got to meet a lot of these.
You must have met everybody though.
Well, eventually. Major. Yeah. I mean, like, it turns out like a lot of the people in Austin, like, they're, you know, a lot of them are still there and doing their thing, you know.
Yeah. Well, right, of course. By the way, for those who are listening who don't know, there was a
homage, remake
mm-hmm. of Slacker that came out about it was 2 years ago, called Slacker 2011.
Like on the 25th anniversary or something like that.
Is that right?
The 20th anniversary.
Oh, yeah. But, that's in. So Richard Linklater, though, had nothing to do with the remake.
No.
But do you know if he ever saw it? Or?
Oh, he did. Yeah, he enjoyed it. He really enjoyed it.
Nice.
It was a wonderful, I think he took it as a great compliment.
Can you get him on the show?
Sure, I can talk to him. And
it's going to happen. And I'm going to hold on to the show until you make that happen.
Well, like, you could call him because he's in Austin, right? I mean,
you probably don't have any direct. Need to make that happen. I think I tried to. I think he was in his last film. This little thing he did with Julia Delpy and Ethan Hawke.
Midnight.
I don't know where we call it. Yeah, but he was
Midnight.
I'm joking.
Oh,
but
you're joking.
He was not doing, or at least not for me. He was not doing press, so I couldn't get him on. I was hoping to with that.
You know about his new one, right? The 12-year project.
No.
Oh.
I think maybe you mentioned it to me.
It's the one where he has filmed like 10 minutes a year over the period of 12 years. And so you see the characters. Hope I'm not giving up too much because I think that's kind of common knowledge. But it's you see the son of the divorced couple, Ethan Hawke and Patricia Arquette. And they have a son and they're divorced. And so you see the son... age. I mean, you see everybody age, but I think the son probably the most dramatic.
Right? Of course.
Going from 7 to 17 or 18 or 19. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it's still never going to touch the Up series. So.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if he was going for that, but.
No, he wasn't. But yeah. I'm just saying, if you want to see something dramatic, watch, you know, those six films. And Michael Apted was on the show, so I kind of have to give him
kudos.
Oh, yes,
he was. That's right.
But, you know, Richard Linklater would love to have him on. So, but here's my question. So you were living in Boston, you see Slacker, which yes. I also loved, and then you moved to Austin thinking, there's got to be something going on there. I just want to go there and just...
I was very taken by his storytelling. You know, I was very taken by... Yeah. And not even so much these... really wild characters and odd mm-hmm. people. I mean, that definitely was part of it, but I think the storytelling and I thought, oh God, you know, I really want to work with this guy. And Austin seemed doable, you know?
Yeah.
New York was tough. Man.
Sure.
I mean, it's even tougher now. I don't know how people do it.
You know, it's interesting you say that because Kentucker was on recently.
Yeah.
And this is a
he
guy.
He lives in Brooklyn, right?
Or, yeah. Okay. Yeah, he was on just a few months ago, over the summer. And, you know, this is a guy who has done quite a few independent films, you know.
Oh, my God. What was the one where he played the guy that goes up on stage?
Bad Fever.
Oh, I love that.
Where he's, yeah, where he's a socially... Yeah, you know, retarded basically guy who wants to be a stand-up comic, and then he also was in Sun Don't Shine. He basically was the lead in that.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
With Amy Simonson.
Very strong in that. Yeah.
Anyway, he came on recently, and he was very, very feeling very vulnerable because here he was like this guy who kind of niched out, even though I don't think his ego is in the balance. I'm not talking about that, but you know, it's a guy who's been doing, you know, getting work and creating his own low budget films, and then all of a sudden he wants to enter into the New York, you know, he wants to get gigs acting, and, you know, all of a sudden he's gone against these, you know, this whole sort of community of people that are doing this in a very serious way. There's a whole, you know, there's a whole culture of auditioning actors in New York, as you're kind of alluding to, which I can understand if you want to be an actor. It can be very, very intimidating because you're going against guys that are really like good at auditioning and for New York, you know, for parts. Yeah. So you just don't just show up and think you're going to.
But Ken Tucker's got it. He's got it.
Oh, he definitely is a talented guy. Yeah. I'm just saying he found it a very humbling experience to do that for him, even though I'm like, dude, you know, you're so super talented. And he's got a great presence and a great sort of thing going on. I think, you know, he's a good looking guy, too. So you went to Austin and, how long was it before you got a role, or how long was it before you felt like you had become part of that community anyway?
Well, the funny thing was that I got a play right when I got into town. You know, I did this play, Art, and
I remember that play.
Yeah.
It was on Broadway.
I saw it on Broadway. I saw it with
Alan Alda.
I played the Alan Alda character. They did kind of non-traditional casting, you know, and I'm, you know, 30-something playing like a 60-year-old's role. But I had a ball. I just loved that role. And
that was a good play.
I loved that play. And I think one of the reasons why I got it, note to self, Chris, is that I had previously studied the role and done a large part of it at an Emerson production that I was just involved in just very haphazardly in Boston, you know. And so I had sort of like this preparation in a way, and then I hit the audition, and I think when I hit the audition it was like, oh well, here's a guy, he's already done the work of this character, you know, he's prepared. Well, because I did, you know, for note to self, always prepare.
Well, yes, definitely. Yeah. Preparation is a big part of success, I think, in the business.
Oh, it's all
getting parts anyway. And having a good reputation.
What's that saying? You know, careers don't always take off on time, but like spaceships, there's always a guy in a big suit, you know, flying. No,
there's a saying like this because I'm thinking.
No. The saying is careers don't always take off on time. Like spaceships, but you should keep the engine warm.
I don't know.
So to that effect, right? Keeping the engine warm,
yeah,
because they don't always take off on time.
Right.
It's something you need to do.
I think one thing they do in part, and Deborah Messing, if she comes on, can verify this or not, but, you know, the NYU grad program, which I'm pretty familiar with through osmosis, they do teach you preparation and how to audition. And also just there's a very there's respect for being prepared.
Yeah.
Do the work. Be prepared. Don't, you know, it can really make the difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, if you go to the NYU grad program, it's a good start. It opens a couple of doors, but you got to do the work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And
it's just helpful to be in a supportive environment and to have, you know, if you come from a tradition or maybe you just hear the call and you're just kind of like somebody like me out in the sticks, like, I kind of want to make this happen. I don't know how to make it happen, but, And you there's so many ups and downs, and there's so many, just like, you know, every time you go through periods of not working and bad auditions, and you're just thinking, okay, what I want, I could go to culinary school, or, you know, I could, I gave up on art school. Why don't I think about art school? Oh, that's right. Because I don't want to have two things that don't make any money, right?
So yeah, right. It's like the whole set.
But yeah, so I came to Austin and I got this play, and then it was an equity play. I had a great time doing it, and somehow I had a few other plays, but somehow the theater phone stopped ringing, which is fine, because then I started getting involved in the student films at UT.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. So I was able to, you know.
And then that led to a wave of independent films that started coming out of Austin.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Was a lot of them the graduates?
Coalescence. Oh, yeah. Almost all of them. Okay. Yeah. Very I think good. The only ones.
Who were some of those folks?
Jacob Vaughn was a big part of that. Just came out with this movie, Milo. You might have seen that from Magnolia. Brian Poyser was, they were partners. We did a movie together with both
Your
of them.
Dear Pillow.
I wasn't in that, but I was in Cassidy Kids, which
I never saw that.
I think three people saw that. Okay. Still one.
Lovers of Hate.
Lovers of Hate was what I did with Brian. And that was the culmination of, you know, it was like 10 years of doing thesis, pre-thesis, graduate thesis, undergraduate thesis.
Right.
Just I pretty much had my own thesis, but, you know.
But a lot of people.
I mean, I'm like, there's a bunch of people I haven't mentioned. There's Spencer Parsons and David Hartstein and P.J. Raval and Brian. I mean, there's... I just blanked on Brian's last name. Sorry, Brian. But a lot of folks. Yeah. And then Lovers of Hate. And then around about that same time, Paul Gordon. Paul Gordon was another one. Sean Gallagher.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody was making these movies, and I managed to...
All men. It's kind of true.
Well, there's...
It's
there's
a very masculine...
There's Kat Candler.
I don't know.
Jen Garrison is a filmmaker. I did something with her.
Yeah, no sense.
Other female, yeah.
But The Lovers of Hate, I only bring it up because, you know, you're a lead in that.
Right.
That's, you know, and I feel like it would have been great if it had people can now find it on iTunes.
iTunes and Amazon.
Yeah. And I really we'll put a link on the show notes, you know.
Oh, great.
Of course, but I want people to check that out, and so they really know who you are, because you're in like probably 30 other films.
Well, I did have a great year this year in terms of just sheer number.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a small part in Computer Chess by Andrew Bujalski. Had a small part in with Lindsay Burch and
a teacher,
Hannah Fidel, a teacher.
I'm glad you brought those two up, because they've both been on the cover. I've had both on the show.
I was so thrilled to work with Bujalski. Ever since I saw Funny Ha Ha, and I thought, wow, that would be fun.
You could have run into him.
I could have run into him.
You could have run into me at Hunter. You could have run into him at Emerson or wherever.
I know,
you were.
Right? I just didn't run into him until Austin. Kind of chased him down in Austin, but and then Sean Gallagher's Good Night,
right?
And with Johnny Mars,
also another one on the show, on this podcast.
We did Loves Her Gun.
Never heard of it.
I had a small small role in that. White Reindeer.
Yeah.
Pretty excited. Have you had Zach on?
Yeah. We had Zach, Melody, and Anna Margaret.
Oh,
on
great.
Just two episodes ago. You need to listen to that.
Oh, such a great crew.
Yeah.
Love those people.
Right. Everybody's in that
one. Emily Higgins, Grow Up Tony Phillips, which is another. I have a small part in that. Okay. So
that one I have not covered, but I did see it at South by Southwest. It was quite good. Mm. Yeah, you know, you really, and that's only touching the. I mean, there's still also a bunch of other things where maybe you did a day's work or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know,
so it's really just the reach exceeding the grasp, and what's the thing about building foundations underneath the stars, and that's where dreams should
be. I think that's when the spaceship goes off on time, maybe. I'm not certain, but let's keep that engine warm. I think. But I'm sure, catapult you into the New York indie scene, because the big news is if you don't know, is my friend Chris Dubeck, who...
Oh. I'm on the edge of my seat. I'm like, what's the big news?
The big news is,
Adam, what's the...
At least at the moment, while we're doing this podcast...
I'm going to get a clue about what to do with my life after this.
No, well, I keep on course.
All right.
Keep. No, but
it's
you're here in New York.
Event. It's a long-term
event. It is. Yeah. It's very true. I do believe that... it's exactly the right course, regardless of.
Oh, thank you.
It's not one that's always rewarded in the way that, you know, you need to be rewarded, which is actually not necessarily reward. It's when you should be, you know, make a living and be paid and
the mincome. I heard that's a whole idea, getting rid of welfare and just giving everybody $10,000 a year. You know, because that's, I mean, I could teach people how to live, right? I mean.
Oh yeah,
as actors and artists.
Well, $10,000 in some parts of the country still, is a enough to live on. In New York, it's a month here, basically.
That's what I'm discovering.
Assuming you don't have an apartment,
right?
or food isn't, you know.
It's different than the '80s. You know, it's like the whole city.
Yeah,
got a nose job and a facelift, and the whole place got some work done.
But you're here, though, in New York, at least for the moment. And I think sort of, you know, let people know you're here and see what opportunities sort of take advantage
of. Thanks, Adam.
You know, I'm going to let everybody know.
And I'm very excited about I'm excited to hear about my friends that have got stuff at Sundance this year. I'm pretty excited about Kat Candler's. Johnny is in that. Johnny Mars.
Which one?
Hellion, I think, is the feature.
Okay.
And Michael Tully's got Ping Pong Summer.
Right.
And the Zellner brothers, who I still have not worked with, which I'd love to work with. They have something there, too. So, I mean, it's exciting that you see people that you know and that you've worked with make it. You know, I remember once when I was giving tours at Universal Studios.
Where?
Many years ago. Where?
You were in L.A.
I have another story about that. But I was giving tours at Universal, and I remember the two people who are running the place, you know, said, you know, it's very difficult. It's going to be one of the hardest things is watching your friends make it or someone else, their career taking off before yours. And I have to say that I get excited, you know. I think because I've had some success, albeit not monetary, you know, my family likes to remind me of that. You know, you put a lot of years in, and that $60 is going to get you to where, you know. So, but you know, it's coming. That's what I keep telling them. You know, it's on its way. But I get very excited about friends making it. You know, mm-hmm. people I've worked with, and you know, I really wish. You know, I'm thrilled that about Swanberg's stuff. I'm, you know, thrilled to see Alex and Girls. My roommate Bill just shot a pilot with Roseanne Arquette, and you know, I'm just really thrilled to see that. And so I don't have like
that ego.
I guess
you don't begrudge others' success, so that suggests that.
I mean, I think my thing is just maintaining focus and not getting distracted. So I have a lot of interests, and but also, I've had some pretty good people who I look up to who were just very spiritual people who were, you know, just happen to be actors and teachers. And I'll tell you the Universal story.
Yeah.
Briefly, I was on a bus at Sundance in 2010, and guy gets on the bus and we start. He looks over to me and says, "Do I know you? Did I see you in something?" And like, I'm like, "Well, I did this movie that's playing, Lovers of Hate." And, "Oh yes, yes. Oh yeah, I enjoyed that." And he's like, and I asked him, "So what do you do?" You know, and he's. He says, "Oh, I work at Universal." And I said, "Oh, yeah, you know, I used to work at Universal. I used to give tours, you know." And so I start talking about how there's no more King Kong. You know, there was, like, this fire that destroyed everything. And
oh, I didn't know that.
Huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so he's like, "Yeah, you know, that's rough." And anyhow, as I'm getting off the bus, he, you know, gives me his card. And he says, "You know, hold on to this. You know, we're making a list of people we like." And, you know, so, "Oh, thanks, you... That's right. You work at Universal," and I mean, I did make a mental note that he worked at Universal.
Yes,
probably not giving tours, but as I get off the bus, it's like, "Oh, yeah. Richard, Vice President, Feature Casting, Universal Studios." Like, you know, I'm turning to wave, and the bus is gone. But you know, I have this business.
Why is he taking a bus? Come on,
that's a shuttle. Everybody takes a
shuttle.
Oh, a shuttle. Yeah,
but you know, you have the card.
I do. I have the card.
When was that?
That was 2010.
What the fuck is taking so long? Are you serious? I mean, the guy is not going to remember you anymore.
Oh, no. I
you've emailed with him?
Sent him a Hanukkah card, I think.
Oh, okay. 3 years ago. If he did like Lovers of Hate, just say, "You know, I just came across your card.
Yes.
You know, and this is my friend's podcast." And
he would love for you to be on it.
Yeah.
Reminds me of...
Go and connect with this guy.
No, I will connect with him. But that reminds me a little bit of asking, Richard Lorber the other day,
Well, you did bring up, I think you did refer to this anecdote during that conversation.
Oh, didn't I?
But it makes sense. It's a good one. But Richard Lorber is not necessarily going to get you a job. He's distributing computer chess, though.
Yes.
But, good. But, you know, I understand what you're saying, you know, because you didn't know, you thought you were talking to...
No, I
you know, the guy who makes the coffee or something.
I did the internships, and I learned from actors in the 80s. You know, it's treat yourself good after an audition. You're always looking for work.
Right.
Say yes until you have to say no. Go where the work is.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that great stitching? That was something F. Murray Abraham said once when I was working to co-check, and, you know, I don't think, isn't that great stitching? I don't know if that was like one of those sayings, but I just remember that.
F. Murray Abraham, who is in the new Coen Brothers movie, by the way, and is quite memorable in it.
Oh, I'm sure.
So go and see that, Chris Dubeck.
Yeah.
Well, I'm hoping you'll be in New York for a little while.
Yeah.
And that we get to spend more time together.
Mm-hmm.
But, I just want... We're here to talk about Loves Are Gone.
Trieste and Marsley.
Loosely.
Yeah.
Because,
I'm loosely based on...
I'm not even sure I can play this on that same episode. King Lear. It's such a long conversation. Mm-hmm. But Loves Are Gone.
Yeah.
Will be out in New York in January. So, hopefully maybe... I know Trieste is here, but hopefully Jeff will come out in January and support it here.
Can we mention White Reindeer, too, that's coming out? Or that's already...
It is out.
It is out right now.
And it may not be out when this plays.
Oh, I see.
But it is on demand.
I can talk about...
Is on iTunes.
I can talk about Happy Poet, which is on Netflix.
Okay, so Happy Poet is on Netflix.
Computer
White
Chess.
Christmas is on iTunes.
No, that was Bing Crosby you're talking about.
White Christmas. White Reindeer is on... I keep doing that. White Reindeer... Well, White Christmas, it's not wrong.
Of a
White Christmas is on iTunes, I'm sure. White Reindeer is on iTunes.
Right.
And, Computer Chess is likely on iTunes, I'm assuming.
Computer Chess on Netflix.
Okay. It might be on iTunes, too.
And lots of Bob Byington, too. Bob Byington's movies.
Okay.
Somebody up there likes me.
You're in that?
Which I reminded him was an actual Paul Newman movie, but...
I know. He didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
And then,
Harmony and Me.
Harmony and Me.
Yep.
RSO, whatever it's called?
No, that's
Registered Sex Offender.
Equally good movie.
Yeah. So there's a lot you can... Well, you know, most of your films people can find in some manner.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them. Not all, but many of them.
I feel like there's a...
If you have an internet connection.
An alien baby inside me that forces me to do this stuff. Do you ever feel that about...
Well, you're in New York, so if you were to stay put for a little while, you'd probably be you're exploring different avenues. So okay. It might be outside your comfort zone.
8th Avenue and 9th Avenue and 10th. Oh.
All the above.
All the above. I see, yeah. That's interesting. Comfort zone. Yeah.
I think they are there, but you have to rediscover them, because I think, you know, the small community of Austin is, you know, I could see how that could be very, you know, how that could be extremely attractive. And I think coming to New York you can't compare New York to anywhere else in the United States,
right,
in that way, as far as coming here and trying to, like, audition or get roles. I'm not saying, I'm sure it could be far more rewarding here, and mm-hmm. you could find in a community here. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
But I'm just saying it's because it's so global and international a city,
mm-hmm.
and because the industry of entertainment is on some level here.
Right.
You know, but you lived in L.A., so you know.
Yeah, yeah, those are the big dreams over there, too. Yeah,
right, of course. But here you do also have television and you know, a lot of the cable and stuff like that.
It seems like you can have a community. It just takes time, as with any community. I mean, looking at Austin.
Right.
I mean, it was 13 years. I have a community.
And here, though, even if, I don't know how long you'll be here, but you do have, like, these 30 films under your belt.
Yes.
You know, quite mm-hmm. a reel. But I was going to say, I could see you as a guard on Orange is the New Black. That's
right on.
I would see you as an inmate, but
okay.
I don't think that's a possible role on that trip.
Right on.
So you, okay, so let me know what happens if you're sticking around for a while.
Yeah, I'm going to stick around as long as financially possible, and then
good.
And then might have to sell the Volkswagen. If I move here, which is kind of sad to think about, but really love that car.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'll just keep it in the garage.
Yeah.
You have a garage somewhere I could keep it in?
We'll talk about it.
All right.
We'll figure it out. Okay. Because you're right. If there's no reason financially that won't be a big boost to you, there's no reason to sell it. But you have to insure it, I guess.
Yeah. It's worth $50,000.
Easily.
Which I can live off of for
5 years
in Austin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe here too. You know, we're talking about a lot of stuff, and sometimes it comes off as flippant, but you know, I there's enormous highs and lows to what we're doing, and somehow we just stick with it, and I don't know. It's just
at the end of the day, it's a career.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting. It is a career. You know, that's what it is.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on the show, Adam.
I appreciate it.
We'd like to have you on again.
I wish I could say it was, felt it a little bit.
He's doing the De Niro again.
I know.
Everybody's missing that. I didn't have to dress up for this. I'm glad, but.
No, I'm tickled that we finally able to do this. Mm-hmm. And, it was a really good conversation, so you know, I'm glad you came.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. I hope I haven't really been listening to myself as I've been doing it, so it's probably
not
a good
your
thing.
Job.
Yeah.
All right, Chris Dubeck, thank you very much. Film Wise Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you for your attention. I will be back next week with one of the guests I know for sure is filmmaker Latfi Nathan. He is. Has a film out called The 12 O'Clock Boys. It's premiering here in New York theatrically on Friday the 31st of January, the very last day of the month. And it's a documentary I saw at Rooftop Films last summer, and it was a terrific event and a terrific film. And I think it had its world premiere at South by Southwest. But we get into all those details during our conversation. That's Latfi Nathan on the next Film Wax Radio. And then also coming up is the week after that, in the first Wednesday of February, we're going to have an episode with Hal Hartley, the amazing Hal Hartley, which is, like, for me, really an indication of that something's going on with my podcast, and I appreciate it. If you feel the same way, please go to my iTunes page right this moment. Go to iTunes and subscribe if you're not already subscribing. And also do the very, very great kindness of leaving a comment, a star rating, all these things to help elevate the podcast up the ranks. you know, in this huge silo of podcasts. Help FilmWise Radio kind of move up a little bit. It will make a big difference. I appreciate it. You can reach me at adam@filmwax.com if you want to shoot me a note. We're on Twitter at FilmWax, on Facebook at facebook.com/FilmWaxRadio. So very, very available to you. And send your suggestions for guests. I have an endless list of people I'm either working on or wanting to invite. So, but always open to suggestions. And if you have a way in to somebody, it's always a good thing. So I do take suggestions. Listen, thanks so much. This has been episode 189 of Film Wax Radio, presented by Rooftop Films. I'm your host, Adam Shartoff. I'll be back next week with episode 190. Till next time, take care.
I'm so excited because I'm going to go to the High School of Performing Arts. I mean, I was dying to be a serious actress. Anyway, it's the first day of acting class, and we're in the auditorium, and the teacher, Mr. Carp, puts us up on the stage with our legs around everybody, one in back of the other, and he says, "Okay, we're going to do improvisations. Now, you're on a bobsled, and it's snowing out, and it's cold. Okay, go." Every day for a week we would try to feel the motion down the hill. Every day for a week we would try to hear the wind rush, feel the chill. And I double right down to the bottom of my soul to see what I had inside. Yes, I double right down to the bottom of my soul. To me, and he says, "Okay, Morales, what did you feel?" And I said, "Nothing."